Wow, that sounds pretty impressive. I have been doing travel photography. This is my 46th year doing it for a living. So when I realized that on the way here this morning, I kind of thought to myself, I'm getting really old. I started when I was 4, just in case you're doing the math. So, a couple of things you need to know. First of all, I'm working on a sense of humor. It's sort of touch and go, so, you know, work with me on that. I also had the pleasure of being up here a year or two ago with the ladies' probus, which was quite humorous because I had just come back from somewhere and I had a full beard, which I tend to grow when I'm away because my wife doesn't want me to grow one here. And I got a call to ask if I could fill in for a guest speaker who was sick. So I booted up here, and my presentation is usually 45 minutes to an hour, depending on questions. And when I got here, I was a little bit flustered because I was jet-lagged and such, and they gave me 30 minutes to speak. So there's nothing worse than having a 45-minute presentation and doing it in 30 minutes. So it's like, boom, 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 how do you like my pictures so far? You know, that kind of thing. So, excuse me. So it's also interesting. I've done a lot of probus groups. It's also interesting to see an all-men's group, which is kind of interesting. Of course, I said the same thing with the ladies' group, except they were tough. They're a tough crowd. Anyways, I was going to stop Tim's and get some cookies because I figure if there's like 100 guys, there's no way anybody's going to bake cookies. But I was pleasantly surprised. You guys did a great job in the baking end. All right. So what I normally do with these presentations is I just take a few, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 different countries that I've been to where I've had some fun experiences and share those with you. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask. If I don't know the answer, I will make something up. If I usually ask if you've been to the same location, I don't do that because I'm interested in where you've been. I do it because if nobody's been there, I can tell you anything. That's a sense of humor that's just not working. I also suffer from inside-outside, which is a rare disease where sometimes the inside voice comes out, you know, at the wrong time. So I do a lot of MC stuff, and I get accused of that quite often. So such is life. So thank you very much for the technology. Once I get past the slide, the first slide, I'll be good. I call it a world of paradoxes presentation because having been to a number of countries, there's a big conflict in the world wherever you go. There's good and bad, and it's always the two are always sort of fighting each other. You know, everybody wants to be rich. Nobody wants to pay the price to be rich. So you get a lot of people you know, butting heads kind of thing. So I just find that everywhere you go. Well, it worked. Thank you for the technology. So we'll start with Egypt. I should mention, too, of the 102 countries, soon to be 105, I might add, I've never been on a cruise ship. Okay, so I can't talk to you about cruising. I know nothing about it. I've never set foot on it for many reasons. One is I'm not good with rules, and I understand that the boat leaves even if you're not on it, so I'd miss it on the first day. Secondly, I'm not big on eating, like, good food. I'd rather eat local stuff. And I'm not a social person, which you probably already gathered. And the reason I say that, I was at some restaurant, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, with and there were a bunch of people there from Atlanta. And somehow I got engaged in conversation, and it was in Turkey. And I'm trying to find out about Turkey and stuff, and all I'm hearing is about their grandkids in Atlanta. So they were from a cruise stopping. So I thought, no, I'm not the cruising kind. So not that there's anything wrong with cruising. Don't misunderstand me. It's a great way to see the world and to enjoy. It's just not my thing. So I can't speak to cruises. And it's hard to take a cruise into Egypt anyways. So how many people here like to travel? Oh, thank goodness. How many people like to take pictures? Ooh, this is good. If people put their hand up, I'm out of here. How many people have done cruises? There you go. I'm a minority. And how many people have been to Egypt? Good. I've had the pleasure of going twice. First time was in 87. The second time was about 4 years ago. And there's a big difference. I don't know when you folks went. But I had to go with armed guards now. So I didn't do a Nile cruise, again, for the same reason. But I had to drive with a convoy. So my little car with my driver was mixed in with buses, and there were armed guards all over the place. And you think to yourself, wow, that's a heck of a way to go on vacation. So, but anyway, such is life. It's a beautiful, beautiful country. It's got these things called the pyramids. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not. They've been there for a bit. For those of you who haven't been, if you go down here on the other side, this is the town of Giza. And Giza has about maybe 4.5-5 million people. It's part of Cairo. It's on the outskirts of Cairo. So if you take a picture from the other side, all you see is people and little shacks and stuff. If you want a picture, you have to go on this side. If you want a picture like this, to sort of intimate that there's nobody there at all, which is not the case. You're surrounded by millions of your new best friends. I won't tell you much about the pyramids because I think you know a lot about them anyways. You know, they're old. Older than I am. They've got this thing called the Sphinx. This was pretty mesmerizing the first time I went because both times I stayed at the Mina House Hotel, which is right across the street from the pyramids. And I got there about 10 at night in Cairo, whisked to the hotel because I was tired. And I opened the curtains the following morning, and there's a Sphinx right across the street. And that's emotional. I have tears in my eyes from that because you hear about it. You know, you read about it in school and so forth, and then you're actually there. Couple things there. Part of the nose is missing. It didn't fall off. It wasn't badly constructed. It was just that Napoleon decided he needed something for target practice with his cannons. So he hit a couple of big cannonballs into the nose, and that's why pieces are missing. There's also a beard that down here, which is in the British Museum, because when they excavated this back in the late 1800s, the sand used to come up to the top here. So when they dug away, they found this beard. And the Brits thought, oh, this would be great in our museum. You know, so they took it with them. And now the head is starting to crumble. It's starting to break. So Egypt is trying to get this beard back from England. So I kind of hope they do, because without the head, this thing is really just another rock. And up here, you can see initials. So when the sand was up here, people, again, primarily British, because they're the ones who traveled here, back in the late 1800s, they would go there and they would carve their initials in the side. So you can see mine just up here. But they've left that, obviously. It's part of history. So it's interesting. Can you hear me okay at the back? I should have asked that earlier. Yeah? Good. Thank you. So this is just... this is funny because I asked this fellow if he would mind posing. And typical mentality, he wants bakshish, which is money. So I had to give him an Egyptian pound, which is about 25 cents Canadian, to be in the picture because I wanted to get a perspective, right? Unfortunately, he stayed with me the whole day. And every time I took a picture, he wanted another Egyptian pound. So now, this is in the Valley of the Kings area, which is sort of in Middle Egypt, down by Luxor and Karnak. And this is where King Tut's tomb is buried, discovered, whatever. That's where King Tut's remains were. So I had to go and shoot King Tut's tomb. Now, in Egypt, there's a charge for anybody who looks like they're a professional photographer, and which it turns out is anybody who doesn't use their phone to take pictures. And the charge is anywhere from $25 to $100 per site. So Valley of Kings has like maybe a dozen or so different sites. So... I'm on a budget, right? I'm only being paid nickels and dimes because, as a photographer, there's no money in this. So I'm struggling. So I decided to cut a hole in my traveling bag and just stick my camera through there and just shoot from the hip. Because, you can do that with digital, right? The first time I did that was in China at the Terracotta Warriors back in the 80s. Same thing. I shot from the hip, but that was film. So that becomes very expensive. But... with digital, it's great. You just boom, 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 boom. 4,000 pictures later, oh, I got a good one. So they do have this thing there, these people called security guards, and which are very unfair. They dress in a normal Egyptian garb. There's no signage or anything. It's like an unmarked police cruiser. It's really unfair. Well, think about it, really. I mean, would you speed if you saw a police cruiser? No, you obey the rule. So why would they have unmarked ones? So anyway, so these guys, I heard somebody yelling, photograph. So I know enough not to turn around when I hear that, if I'm doing something wrong. So I just walk faster, and I kind of glance over my shoulder, and they're chasing me. And I'm running, and they're chasing me, and I'm running. And I'm not a kid anymore, okay? So running has not come easy for me. It's 46 degrees. I ran for about 45 minutes up into the mountains. And these guys wouldn't give up. So I found a tomb. There are hundreds and hundreds of tombs in Egypt in the Valley of the Kings that have been excavated. And they're just empty, like caves sort of thing. So I just dove in one, and I just lay there praying, one, that these guys would leave, two, that my heart would keep pumping. And finally they did leave, and I hear this noise behind me, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm in a cave with bears in Egypt. And I thought, do they have bears? So I was a little paranoid because, you know, I've, the ghost of Ramses is coming out the tomb, you know, Boris Karloff, the whole thing is going through my mind. And out comes this kid who's about maybe 8, 9 years old, and he took my hand and he walked me back into this tomb, and these people lived there. So there was a husband and wife, they had a daughter about maybe 12 or 13, a little boy about 8, and grandpa, who I assume is grandpa, who's sitting in the only chair in this room. So I don't know what to say, what to do. Their English was no good at all. My Egyptian or Arabic was even worse. So we're just sort of smiling. And then they offer me a little drink, which was like, I don't know if you've ever been to Hawaii and drank poi, but it's kind of like a combination of manure and mud. So if you can feel that. And then the old guy got up, and I had to sit in his chair, which, you know, I always do as people want me to do because it's their place, and I don't want to insult them. So I sat there, and I drank this stuff, and about 10 minutes later, my tummy started not going well. So I need to use the bathroom. So I use the only Arabic word I know, which is toilet. And I said toilet. And they seem to know what I was talking about. So the girl takes me around to the side of the tomb. And obviously, you know, that was the toilet area. So she leaves me there. Now, my backpack and that was down in the car. So as I'm kind of, you know, finishing, it's hard to, well, it's a bunch of guys, so I can say it sort of straight, right? So as I'm sort of finishing, I realize I don't have any toilet paper with me. And they must have known this because the girl comes out and she's got this box with newspapers cut into about 1 square foot. So I'm doing one of these scrambling things right away and I almost fell over. And then she hands it to me, but I can't reach it. And she wants an Egyptian pound. So I'm now going through my hands looking for some money. So I gave her a pound. She gives me one sheet. The second sheet was also a pound. So $2 later and a lot of embarrassment, the little boy finally walked me back down to where the car was, and I continued on. So anyways, that was that. This is taken from up on top of the hills. This is the Valley of Kings area. This is sand, not snow. And I say that only because somebody asked me if it was snow. With 46 degrees, you're not getting a lot of snow. So when you're traveling, what I do is I carry a foreign newspaper. I pick it up at the airport. As soon as I land, I take an airport. I just did this. I just came back from Romania, Bulgaria, and I've got a newspaper from Bulgaria tucked under my arm. And the reason is people then assume that I'm Bulgarian. So the chance of getting mugged is much less. Why else would you have a Bulgarian newspaper if you can't read Bulgarian? So it's just something to keep in mind if you're traveling. Also, stay away from things washed in local water. And, I mean, I don't use water anywhere. I've never been sick, touch wood, on any travels. I don't take any salads. I don't eat salads. I don't eat fruit that's washed in water. Nothing at all. Only bottled water. And it has to be opened. It has to be closed. It can't be opened. And I just found out, I was just in Paris, and I was in line for a museum, and somebody was selling water bottles. And I was really thirsty. And the guy behind me said, I'm with the police. And I said, yes, you don't buy that bottle of water. Because it was cheap. It was like a euro or something. And he said, what they're doing now is they're filling up bottles of water with any kind of water. And then they're using crazy glue to glue the cap on. So when you open it, it snaps. You assume it's locked. So there's another one, you know. I got this from when I was in China way back when. And I was in a restaurant going to a restroom. And I got lost and went out the back, and there was a guy washing lettuce in this big pot, and his wife or lady comes in, reaches in, and takes some clothing out, wrings it out, and hangs it on the wash. So that's when I thought, no, I'm not eating this stuff. Okay, next place is Mostar. Has anybody been to Mostar? It's in Bosnia. And it's one of the most beautiful places on the planet. I was really surprised. I'm always, you go to places that you hear a lot about and you think it's going to be spectacular, but it's the ones that you don't know anything about that are really, really cool. So this is Lake Ohrid, just in Bosnia, sort of in the center. You can see how crystal clear the water is. Very, very beautiful. For some reason, it's a tourist haven for Dutch tourists. I was born in the Netherlands, so I can say anything I want about the Dutch, okay? Has anybody heard Dutch? Obviously, a name like De Visser, you have to be Dutch. Anybody else Dutch? No? There we go. Just you and I. And I don't know why so many Dutch people go there, other than it's cheap, and so are the Dutch. But, well, it's true. I mean, really, right? You know how they make copper wire in the Netherlands, right? You give two Dutchmen a penny. Sorry, Hans. somebody told me the other day, you can always tell a Dutchman, you just can't tell him much. That was pretty funny. I was hurt. So this is the big bridge in Bosnia. Sorry, did I offend you? No. This is the big bridge in Bosnia, and it's the only thing they have going for them. In Mostar, and the river is called the Stari Most. And the bridge was demolished in the 1990s during the war. It was blown up. It was built in the 1600s. So they decided in 2004 they're going to reconstruct it. So what they did was they put out tenders, and it was a Scandinavian group of engineers that got the deal. And they wanted to restore it exactly the way it was, or very close to the way it was. And they did a great job of it, but they couldn't figure out how to get the materials in, because it's just a cobble street. So 400 years ago, it was no issue, because there was no heavy equipment. But now, there is, and they didn't know how to do that, so they actually dammed the river, dried it out, and then brought the machinery in that way and built it that way. So this picture's on the front of a magazine over there. And I wanted the shot, and I kind of knew where it was. The problem was there was a mosque right where I wanted to take the picture. So I walked into the mosque and immediately got asked to leave because I had my camera around me. So I put a jacket on over top of the camera, walked back in again, and I saw stairs that went up to what I thought was a balcony. So I went up the stairs. And the balcony was empty, and there were three or four windows. So I go up to the window, and I start shooting. And I get to, like, the second or third picture, and I hear this yelling and screaming behind me. And it turns out I was in the women's-only section of the mosque. So, and I'm very respectful of religions. Like, I really am, you know, cultures and such. But I just didn't know. So they asked me to leave. And they were pretty vehement about it. They actually took me by the arm. But fortunately, they didn't take my camera. So I managed to get five pictures, and this was one of them. And you really only need one. So I lucked out. That's the mosque there, and these are the windows here that I took the picture from. So you could see. So when you're traveling, check your luggage on all your carriers that you're taking. I got messed up with this. I went to Iceland. And Air Canada into New York, and I think the luggage limit was 35 kilos. Iceland, it was 25. Iceland Air. So in New York, I had to take about 8 kilos out of my suitcase and leave it, you know, as a gift to the nice people in New York. So I always check to make sure that every carrier, what the limit is, no matter what where you're traveling. Okay, so next stop is Zimbabwe. Anybody been to Zimbabwe? Have you? Do you like it? No? Oh. Okay. When were you there? Okay. Can I ask why you didn't like it, or? Just? Mugabe. Totally. Totally. I agree. Yeah, and it's not any better now. Like, it's worse, even though he's kind of gone, but, you know, his regime is still in place. Zimbabwe, once upon a time, it was known as Rhodesia, right? When Ian Smith was prime minister back in the 60s. And like so many African countries, you know, democracy and taking back their land is important. Zimbabwe, what I enjoyed about it was that there's a travel advisory issued against Americans for Zimbabwe, not for danger, just from the political differences between the countries. And when there's a travel advisory issued by a government, then health insurance doesn't have to pay for anything that happens. So there weren't a lot of Americans there. So I checked into the Victoria Falls Hotel, which is this beautiful, beautiful hotel built around 1904 or so, 1908. It's all white stucco with red roof, beautifully manicured lawns. And I walked in, and the lobby was sort of like the way you picture the old Royal York Hotel back in the day, you know, wood, beautifully done. And there was a sign there that said, currency exchange, 800 Zimbabwe dollars to one U.S. dollar. So I thought, ooh, that sounds like a lot of money, you know. For me, it's all about numbers, right? It doesn't matter what it buys. So I said to the lady behind the counter, I checked in, and I said, you know, can I exchange your money? She said, oh, I have a brother who is in the banking business. He'll call you. He'll give you a better rate. I said, okay. So I go up to my room. The phone rings. It's the brother. And he said, the current rate I can offer you is 3,000 Zim dollars to one U.S. I said, whoa. So now I'm skeptical, right? Because I've been taken advantage of left, right, and center all over the world. So I'm getting skeptical now. So I said, okay, let me get back to you. So I had to go meet my tour guide who was in the next little hotel about maybe, half a kilometer down the road. So I go in the lobby, and there's this guy who's about, he plays for the Raptors. He's about 8 foot tall. He's got this massive big stick, and he said, I am your guard. And I said, okay, and I'm sort of like, so if I don't want a guard, you're going to beat me to a pulp. Right? So anyway, so we go walking down to this thing, and he's with me, and there's no reason I needed a guard other than panhandlers. People come up, they want to sell you everything. And I bought a ton of stuff. Like I bought a beautiful carved basket and a beautiful carved hippo and a big long walking stick. And altogether it was about $2. So you can't carry what you could possibly spend. So I get to this other hotel, and I said to the lady, the tour guide, and I said, okay, so I'm such and such, here's what we're going to do. I'm here for the week, and I need to change some money. She says, oh, let me find out what the rate is. So she said, it's 3,500 to one. I said, wow, this is really getting good. And I said, so is this an underground economy? So she said, it's $3,500 to one. I said, okay, I won't ask. So she said, how much do you want to exchange? So I said, $500. And she said, are you staying for a year? So I said, okay, how about 100? So I gave her the $100. She gives it to some little kid who goes tearing out the door with the money, and I figure that's the end of that. So she said, it'll take about an hour. Why don't you go into the restaurant next door, have lunch, and by the time it's finished, then we'll have the money for you. I was thinking, sure. So I go to the restaurant, I have a typical Zimbabwe meal, pizza, Heineken, and ice cream. And it was actually very tasty. And then I realized I didn't have any money to pay. So I said to the fellow who was the waiter, I said, look, I just have to go and exchange money, so I'll be right back, okay? He said, no. I said, you must pay. I said, okay, but I don't have any money. And he gave me this look. So I, right out of the movies, I took my watch, and I said, here, keep my watch until I get back. So that did the trick. I thought that was kind of fun. Then I started thinking, God, I'll probably never see my watch again either. I've already lost $100. So I go back, and sure enough, she's got money for me. She has $350,000, a lot of money. And I had no concept of how much money this really was, except it filled a shopping bag. And I looked at the bills. I don't know if you noticed it, too, but they're all brand new. Like, they just came off a photocopier, and they're dated. They have an expiry date on it. So I am now walking around with this massive shopping bag full of money, and I realize why I have a guard. So I go back, and I paid for the lunch, got my watch back, went back to the hotel, and started figuring out, and lunch cost me $1.65. So I thought, ooh, this is going to be a long week. So I was tipping people in the restaurants and that, the equivalent to like a month's wages, because you can't take the money with you. And I kind of figured out that I have much more money than I need. And they certainly have a use for it, so why wouldn't I? So even my security guard, he slept outside of my room in the hallway. They put me in a wing all by myself for some reason. I guess they sized me up right away. So so I got pretty friendly with the wait staff, and I asked somebody about halfway through the week, I want to see the Southern Cross. I've been south of the equator many, many times, but I've never seen it. And because it always comes out at night, right, which is really ridiculous. I sleep at night. It's like people take pictures of sunrises, right? You just got really early for that. That sucks. I'm trying to figure out how to do that at noon. I haven't quite mastered that yet. So anyway, so they said, okay, Friday night, my last night, they're gonna wake me up at 2 in the morning. We're going to see the Southern Cross. So sure enough, 2 o'clock, they wake me up, and there's 6 of them. And they've got 2 bottles of Grand Marnier. I don't know how they got that. And we're sitting on the lawn, and we're looking at the Southern Cross, or whatever else we're looking at. By about 6:30 in the morning, I'm not sure what we saw, but it was a lot of fun. So I dispersed the rest of my money between them all, and I left Zimbabwe. So this is Victoria Falls, by the way. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a little waterfall there. It's kind of like the like Niagara, a bit bigger. This is a hippo. Now, most people only take pictures of the front of the hippos, right? I didn't want to be the ordinary guy. By the way, these are all my pictures, right? If you don't like them, I'm really sensitive to that, okay? So that's fine. I appreciate you're entitled to your own opinion, but please don't tell me. I can't handle it. So the reason I took the back of the hippo was I'm in a little boat, and the guy's paddling along, and actually he's got a motor on the back. And this hippo, and I said, a little bit closer. I want to take a picture of the hippo. So he said, no, this is enough. I said, come on, a little bit closer. Because the hippo's on land, we're in water. By the time they get in, blah, 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 blah. So what I didn't know is that hippos, to mark their territory, they poop. And then they use their tail to scatter it. And it goes about 20 feet. So suddenly, I am covered in hippo dung. My camera. My poor little Nikon still smells. And all I could see was a guy on the boat killing himself laughing by the motor at the end, right? So that's why I just took a picture of the back of the hippo. I just think that's much more interesting part. These are just some animals that you see. They're run-of-the-mill stuff. This one is sort of like lunch look on his face, The lions, too, they have this sort of hungry look. So thank God for Jeeps. And also my motor transportation. Some people go with Jeeps and stuff. I like to go a little rougher. This is an ostrich. The only reason I really have this picture is because you have to be 165 pounds or less to ride an ostrich. I find that very impressive because you guys are around the same age as I am, and it's hard to lose the weight, right? So I make a note of that. Also, you slide off the back of these. I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity to ride an ostrich. But you instinctively grab the throat because you're sliding off the back, and this thing runs fast. They don't like to have their throats grabbed and squeezed. I don't know why. So it took about maybe, 30 seconds, and boom, there goes the ostrich. I'm on the ground. So if you're riding ostriches, give me a call. I'll give you some information. If you're looking for a good room in a hotel, if you arrive in the afternoon and ask for an upgrade, usually that's when you get them. Because they've already sold out everything. I try and stay in business hotels if I'm traveling over a weekend because they're empty. So you get the best room. I was in Rio, and I checked in, and I was going to be there for 3 days, and it was a Friday night, and the place was empty. So they upgraded my $60 room to like a $300 suite with a beautiful view of the ocean. And then I told them I was staying another 5 days. Well, they're not going to leave. They're not going to throw you out, so I managed to do quite well. I didn't know I was going to be there that long, but did quite well the hotels. Turkey, which is another great place. I love Turkey. Anybody been to Turkey? You travel a lot. I won't ask if you liked it or not. Did you? Yeah? What's that? I'm not sure about now. I'm going in 2.5 months, so I'll let you know. All right, you may never see me again. I'm doing Israel and Jordan, and then a 2 days in Istanbul, and then 4 days in Monte Carlo. That should be fun. Walk into the casino there. I'm taking $20. Going to go for broke. Hopefully I can get in the door. Anyways, so Turkey has a lot of things. It has a mosque, which you may have heard of. It's the Blue Mosque. It's the largest in the world. I think it's the largest. It's currently the most prestigious in the world. It has 6 towers, 6 minarets. That's how you tell. There's one in Dubai that has 5, and the one in Mecca has 6 as well. All the other mosques have either 4, 3, 2, or if you get to Canada, they usually only have 1. It's sort of like if you're Catholic, St. Peter's Basilica in Rome is the largest church. You cannot build a larger cathedral than St. Peter's. That's just the way it is. They have a brass strip down the middle of St. Peter's that has all the other churches or cathedrals that are, you know, their size sort of from the back to where they are. St. Mike's is among them too. But if you're thinking of building a cathedral bigger than St. Peter's, you can't do that. Same with the mosques. So this is in the middle of Turkey, a place called Cappadocia. And these are called fairy chimneys. And what they are is they're sort of like land formation, like the hoodoos, if you've been out to Alberta, that sort of thing. And people back in the day, the Moors were attacking this area, and the Christians for 300 years hid from them. And they dug tunnels underground, and there are miles and miles of tunnels. And in those tunnels, they've got churches that have been beautifully decorated, everything to sustain life. And then they built these little fake entrances everywhere. There's only one or two that are real, but the Moors never found it. In all these years that they were attacking, the Moors never found them. We were never able to get the people because they would just run and hide in all these tunnels and everything, and they couldn't figure out how to get in. So really quite an interesting thing to see. Topped only by the whirling dervishes. Now, if you haven't seen the whirling dervishes, you really haven't lived. It's about a three-hour show, and this is what they do for 3 hours. They spin. It was $20, I remember that, to watch them spin. And after 20 minutes, I'm thinking, when does it change? So it sort of went on and on. Now, you know, you get to a certain age, and 2 hours is about it without a toilet break, right? So I don't know what these guys, they were high on something. They said that they just get sort of high on the spinning and that. There's no way. They're doing something to get into this. So did you get a chance to see them? No? You should go back. It's riveting. So 3 hours and 15 minutes later, it finally finished. And I wasn't any wiser when I left. I don't know. You know, you try and learn as much as you can about it. And it was interesting for about 15, 20 minutes. So, now I should tell you before, this is a little restaurant that I had lunch. This is on the Mediterranean coast in I think it's called Antalya. Yeah. So I'm about 2 hours from this place. I get in the car in the morning, and it was a nice little Mercedes, and the driver was a very friendly person. He'd been with me the whole time there. And we're driving along, and suddenly I have to go to the bathroom, because it happens, right? So I said to him, I said, toilet time. And he said, oh, yes, 2 hours. I said, no, I'll be 2 minutes. So when my stomach gurgles, like, you know, the body's got a great way of telling you that you got to do something, right? So I said, maybe 1 minute. So he said, okay, he knew of a park. And the park is only 5 minutes away, which in Turkish time is about 20. So we're not doing well now. So as he pulls into this park, I see the concrete building. I run out of the car before he even stops. I'm looking for some Turkish lira in my pocket because I know there's going to be a little old lady who's not going to let me in unless I pay her money. So I got that covered. I get inside. There's three stalls, no doors, three stalls, a trough for washing your hands, and a mirror along the other wall. So I'm good. I'm in the stall. I'm happy. I'm the only one in there. And then, of course, it dawns on me that, oops, I'm in an Arabic country. They don't have toilet paper. And mine is in my backpack in the car. So I look, and I don't know if you've had this experience, but they have little taps, right? And the tap is fine. It's got a little hose about this long. And the idea is you turn the tap on, you use the hose, and you clean yourself. That's the way it is. That's why Muslim people or Arabic people don't use their right hand they don't use their left hand for eating, ever. So I'm good. I turn the tap on. Nothing comes out. I'm thinking, geez. So I turn a little bit further. Nothing comes out. I open it all the way up. There's nothing. So I figure, okay, maybe I should try the next stall because there's nobody in here anyways, right? All of a sudden, I hear this noise. Water comes out. And if you were blowing up a balloon and sort of let it go, well, that's what happened with the hose. It's all over the place. And there's water spewing all over me. I am soaked from top to bottom. Not happy. As I'm kind of, you know, getting up, I look and there's a lady washing her hands, looking at me in the mirror, killing herself laughing. So I am just like totally embarrassed. So I get back in the car and he just kind of looked at me and he said, you know, he didn't say anything. He just looked. I said, don't even ask. Let's just go. So off we go. You know, you start to dry out eventually. So we get to Antalya in this little restaurant and it was nice. So we're sitting in the patio and we ordered lunch. And I look over and there's the lady from the bathroom sitting there with a friend, I guess her husband, and another couple. And she catches my eye and she whispers something in her friend's ear and she looks at me and they start laughing. So I'm thinking, what are the chances? So when the food came, I said, let's just take this to go. I've had enough here. So off we went. So that was my Turkish experience. So the moral is take toilet paper with you everywhere you go. This is the Hagia Sophia, which used to be a cathedral, used to be a Christian church, and then I guess the Ottomans turned it into a mosque. It's spectacular. It's really, really beautiful. So did you know business class has its own ventilation system in airplanes? So if you're sitting in the back, you tend to get a cold much easier than you do in the front. So spend the extra $25,000 and upgrade. Angkor Wat in Cambodia. Has anybody been there? No? Have you? Do you like it? I shouldn't ask that anymore. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big mess of rocks and stuff. It's a big temple complex. It's actually three temple complexes. And this is the main one at Angkor Wat. And to get that picture, it's kind of stupid. It was for a magazine, and they wanted the shot, but the sun comes up behind the temple. So it's really, really, from a photography perspective, it's hard to shoot when the sun is shining right into your lens. But that's the place. So I had made arrangements with a fellow who was going to take me there. So we're going to leave at 3 in the morning so I could get all set up for 4. And then with sunrise, I'm ready to go. So sure enough, he shows up right on time, about 20 to 4. And on his motorcycle, which had no headlight. And he had no helmet. So I'm on the back of the motorcycle with my backpack on, and we're zipping through streets. Wherever we're going, it's pitch dark, and I am terrified. So we finally get there. It's about a half-hour drive. We finally got there, and I sort of got organized, set myself up, ready to go. He had bought breakfast, which was a hard-boiled egg, and that was it. No coffee, nothing. And he took some water out of the pond to kind of wash it down. I didn't do that. So all is well until about maybe, I don't know, 20 to 6 or so. The sun's just about to come up, whenever that was. And three tour buses come in. And now I have no problem with Asian tourists, except they like to take more pictures than I do. And they wanted the same spot I had. So all of a sudden, we're sort of like, hey, whoa, this is my place. Quit trying to move me. So they're really getting aggressive. So if I take this picture back about 10 feet, you'll see about 90 of my new best friends. So I look very serene in that. But we managed to make it work. This is part of Angkor Wat. And you can see the trees are sort of grown over this, right? And they can't take the trees down because the whole buildings will all fall apart. This was actually where they filmed Indiana Jones and I think the Temple of Doom. I'm not sure. One of the movies. And when they had it all set up and they realized there are no monkeys in this area. So they had to bring truckloads of monkeys in from God knows where. For the film. It's also supposed to be haunted in there, but it's not. My wife went in, and she came out. So, nothing wrong there. You can see the roots here from the trees, how the roots work, and how beautiful they are. Like it's a really magical place. This was my mode of transportation. Thought, well, why not do an elephant? Anybody ever ridden an elephant? Yeah. You got to do that, too, before you die. I don't know if there's many here in Lindsay, but I think if you go over to Peterborough, you'll probably find one. So this bar along here, this is very important because they told me that's to keep the building from falling apart. It's really there to cut back on the tourists because it's about a foot higher than the back of the elephant. And you go through that. And an elephant doesn't really care what's on its back. If it can go through, it's happy. So I'm on the back of this elephant, and I've now got to lean all the way over on this little platform to get under this thing. I almost whacked my head against the side as I'm leaning over. I made it, but it was very uncomfortable. And the seat shifts, right? So every 20 minutes, you have to go on the other side so it'll shift back. So it's a long day. So this is, I just took this picture because those pigs are still alive. And I thought he was going to market, and then I thought, oh, they're probably pets. He's probably taking them home to his kids and that. So I wasn't really sure, but they were still moving. So, they're pigs. Yeah. Yeah. They're sort of like upside down pigs here. This is the tail. This is the nose. Yeah. I think you have them up here in Kawartha. I'm pretty sure. So these airlines, American, Ryan, and New Zealand, they offer the least amount of legroom. So American Airlines, which is one that a lot of people fly here, have the most seats crammed into the airplane. There's a site called SeatGuru.com. If you haven't heard of it, it's called SeatGuru.com. And what it has is every single airplane and every flight in the world. So I'm a big believer of upgrading your seat to the bulkhead for like the $100 or whatever it costs on long-haul flights, because then you get to sit at the front of the economy section and you get to be off the plane pretty quickly. So I use SeatGuru for everything. So I got a flight with Jordanian Airlines, Royal Jordanian, and I had no idea what the airplane was, a 321 or something like that. So I go to SeatGuru.com. It gives me the floor plan of the entire plane and all the seats. So you put your flight number in, the date you're traveling, and it tells you the plane, and it gives you the seat plan for it. So if you're booking your seats, you can see exactly where you want to sit. So SeatGuru.com. It's really, really handy to have. So, Taj Mahal, India. So, I know you've been to India. Anybody else been to India? No? Oh, India is wonderful. It takes about a week to acclimatize. I was there for 6 weeks. The first week was tough. It really was. I don't know if you found it out, but people spit everywhere. It's just a way of life. And you know, you have to be careful. I was taking a picture of something, and there was a lady who was squatting down urinating right beside my foot. So that kind of, you know, think to yourself, yeah, Perry's looking pretty good right now. But you acclimatize. You get used to it because it's a beautiful, beautiful country. Once you get over that initial shock, because it's a totally different culture, and you have to respect that. It's sort of like organized or unorganized communism, if you like. You got a billion people. Like in China, you have a billion people, and they all march the same road. They do exactly as they're told. In India, they do whatever they want. Like driving a car in India, maybe your lifespan is about 12 minutes. Yeah. If you drive yourself, you probably won't get through the first minute. So the Taj Mahal, that's why I went over there. I went over there for 4 days to shoot the Taj. I stayed for 6 weeks because I got other jobs while I was there. So this is the Taj. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. It's a cute little building that was built by a Muslim mogul back in about 400 years ago. I did know his name. It's Jai something or other. It doesn't really matter. It took 25 years to build at a cost of about $300 million today's dollars. And what they did is they had artisans from the whole area that come. One guy would draw like little flowers, and then the next guy would come and chisel those little flowers out, and then somebody would come with a hammer and some rubies and stuff and mash them into the wall. So the wall of this entire place, inside and out, is all covered in these precious stones and carvings and just beautiful work. When he built it, he had two sons. He built it actually for his wife, who had passed away at the age of 39, giving birth to her 14th child. Now, that would kill anybody at the best of times, right? So the two oldest sons were kind of squabbling about this. One said, hey, Pop, you shouldn't be building this thing. It's too much money. And the other smiled, let him have some fun. For gosh sakes, he's worked hard. So they had a little fight between the two brothers. One killed the other, and that solved that problem. So unfortunately, the one that survived was the one who didn't want this thing built. So he had his father arrested and put into the Agra Fort, which is less than a kilometer away. And for the last 8 years of his life, he could watch them finish the Taj, and he watched him put his wife's body inside in the tomb, but he never actually set foot in there until he died, and they buried him in there. So that's kind of sad. Kids, eh? Gosh. So this is how they cut the grass there. And it's not because of they're antiquated. It's just because there's no vehicular traffic allowed within half a kilometer of the Taj Mahal. So I was fortunate. My hotel was about 600 meters or so. And they picked me up. I had a choice, a golf cart, donkey, or camel. Let me tell you, a golf cart is pretty comfortable. So that's what I did. So this is how they cut the grass. Kind of neat. I tried it at home. But little Kayla, my foxhound, can't seem to pull the stupid thing. This picture is just to show you these towers here were built on a bit of an angle. So if there's ever an earthquake, they would fall away from the main building instead of smashing it, which is pretty smart. Also, you used to be able to climb up to the top. You can't do that anymore now. I think they closed it around 2005 or so because it was the world's highest suicide jumping place. So I don't know why there. I mean, it's really knocks the heck out of the tourists walking down below. But I did learn, do you know what the second highest jumping place is for suicides in the world? The Bloor Viaduct. The Bloor Viaduct over the parkway. 111 people per year. So they put $6 million worth of things up there. Now they go up to the next bridge and jump from there. So who'd have known? And this is the Taj. I always tell people this is what the king saw, you know, from his fort. Actually, this is from my hotel room. It's the same sort of distance, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful view. So this is the main building, the one that you see, and these are two side mosques that they use for actual prayer. This is in Port Perry. This is how we. Actually, this guy back here pumping gas had a cigarette going. That's why I got out of the car to take a picture, because I thought this thing was going to blow any minute. So when you travel, make sure you photocopy or take a picture with your phone of the inside page of your passport, okay? Because if you lose your passport, how are you going to prove who you are to get another one? So if you have a copy of this page here, you can go to any Canadian consulate or embassy, and within 24 hours, you'll have a new passport. So always photocopy it. I just photocopy and put it in the bottom of my suitcase. So, and stay away from hotel glassware. Like, please stay away from hotel glassware. They use Windex to clean the glasses. They'll wash them in the toilet, whatever. You want to use bottled water. Buy it in a variety store or something, not out of the minibar. But the glasses in hotels, unless they're wrapped in plastic and sealed. But, you're only as good, no matter how nice the property is, you're only as good as the lowest common denominator. And that's the person who's paid half a minimum wage. Kumayala is another little area. We good for time? You said I had till about 2:30, right? That was a joke. Kumayala is in the middle of the Caribbean. Now, the plan was not to go here. I'll just show you. It's back in here. I was in Cuba and in Panama, and I had to go to Cuba. My wife was waiting for me in Cuba. So I get on a plane, and it's a, what do you call those things, Twin Otter, Canadian built, made in the early 60s, last maintained in the early 60s. I get on the plane, and there's nobody on it at all, and then the pilot gets on, and there's a big opening where there should be a door between first class or second class or, you know, the 10 rows, 8 rows of whatever class it is, and the pilot, and there's nobody else on the plane. So off we go, no co-pilot. No food, no movies. So we're zipping along, and all of a sudden, he looks at me. And then I look at him. And I don't like that when they look at you, you know. And then he taps the gauge. That scares me even more. I know my car, if I have to tap the gauge, it's not a good sign. So he looks at me again, and I'm smiling. And then I realize he's not really looking at me. He's looking past me. And I look out the window behind me, and there's those things on the wing that go around. Well, this one wasn't. So I figured, okay, well, we've got another one. He's two engines on this thing. You know, it'll work. So he's going like this, pointing down. So I'm thinking, we're going to crash? Like, what is he? Because he spoke Spanish, and I didn't speak any Spanish. So so he does this landing thing on this little island. It came out of nowhere, called Kumayala. And there's about 1,000 people there. And then I get off the plane, and I've got my backpack, and he takes the plane up again, and he flies around. And I figure he's taking off, but he's not. He's just testing to see. So it turns out that he needs a part or something. It's going to be 2 or 3 days. So now I'm stuck here in the middle of nothing and no cell phone reception, and I know my wife in Cuba is going to blame me for this. That I know. I've got 43 years of marriage. You know it's my fault no matter what it is, right? So this guy in this outrigger-type canoe picks me up and takes me to my own little island, which is back there with my own little hut right there. So I have no concept of what's going on, except there are two ladies there who are now going to look after me, and there they are. So this one here, this black line, this is an indicator of beauty. The longer the line, the more beautiful. She is. So I didn't want to meet her sister, let me tell you. So it was like getting close to dinner time, and I'm going like eating, and they said, "See," and you know, they speak their own language, and they're trying to find out what I want to eat. So I'm kind of thinking, oh, you know, anything is good. So they brought me fish, which is fine because you're surrounded by water. And then for breakfast, same thing. So I'm going like, you know, I want bacon and eggs. So I'm going like, quack, 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 oink, 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 you know. So they got that. So they brought me more fish. And then they picked me up around noon, another guy in a boat, and took me out to this island, which looked just like the island I was on, except there's no hut, with snorkeling gear. So I'm trying to explain, I don't really have a bathing suit. And then I'm kind of thinking, well, you know, there's nobody around for 1,000 miles. Who cares? So I got the snorkel thing going. I'm all by myself now. He took off with this boat. I'm all by myself, and I'm snorkeling, and I'm just in the water, and I think to myself, I bet there's sharks here. So off I go. And then I start thinking, I wonder if he'll ever come back. So about 4 hours later, he came back to pick me up, took me back, had dinner. The next day, we finally took off, and we made it back to, finally made it to Cuba. There's a lot of albino kids there because there's a lot of inbreeding of the 1,000 or so residents. A lot of, well, I say a lot, maybe 10, 12 or so, which is a pretty high percentage. So also carry 2 passport photos with you when you travel, even if you look like this. The reason is that if you need to get a new passport, you need to have photos. And I got stung in Brazil, going into Brazil from Argentina when they had just initiated visas. And I didn't know that. It was like 2 days before, and I'm at the border, and the guy wants $80 for the visa, and it had to be cash, of course. And then I had to get 2 pictures done, and I had to go into town with him, where I'm sure it was his cousin who has a photo shop. It was $40 each for the photos. So from now on, I carry extra pictures with me. And Sri Lanka is another great little town, or country, rather. They have a lot of elephants, and have you ever been to Sri Lanka? No? It's beautiful. It really, truly is beautiful. You have? Yeah? No? It really is beautiful. Elephants galore. They also have this thing called Sigiriya Rock, and you climb to the top of that, and it's about a 4-hour climb. So the lesson I learned is if you want to get back down, you don't go at, you know, 2 in the afternoon because you're coming back in the dark, and that's just not good. Also, all the way up here is sort of like a railing and a metal thing that you walk along. And it's bolted into the rocks. In most cases, there's like only 2 or 3 bolts missing per section. In some cases, there's a lot more. So I'm hugging the rock as I'm going up this thing. And then, of course, this group of tourists, and they have to be German because they're marching. They're coming down, and they're not going on the outside. They want to be on the inside. So I'm standing like this, and I've got like 12 Germans staring at me. So finally, I had to go around them. So that was pretty scary. I got to the top, beautiful, beautiful, sort of almost sunset around 4:30. I'm thinking, I knew it'd be pitch dark by the time I go down there. And it was. It's pretty scary. So these are fishermen. They're actually not, well, I guess they're fishing, but they're not catching fish. They're catching tourists. So they sit there, and you give them $5, and you take their picture. And I don't know if they actually caught any fish or not, but makes for a good shot. This is in Kandy, which is the old capital. It's in the center of the country. It's Kandy. And this is the Tooth Temple. And this is where they keep one of Buddha's teeth. So when I first did this presentation, it's quite funny because the lady asked me, why does Buddha have such big teeth? And I was explained to her that the tooth is actually inside the thing. These are elephant tusks. So I do know the whole story, but it's basically they smuggle the tooth down, and it's like everybody's got something, right? In Albania, I kissed the finger of St. John the Baptist. In, where was it? In Ukraine? No, not Ukraine. In Belarus, I kissed the finger of St. John the Baptist, and I think I kissed his toe somewhere else. So there are 2 fingers and a toe of St. John. So I'm going around the world trying to piece St. John the Baptist together. This was my hotel room. Got there, it was late at night. It was raining like crazy. The water was this high, and a porter at the hotel, this wasn't the place I was supposed to go to. The road was washed out. We couldn't go where I was supposed to. So the porter at the hotel takes my suitcase, puts it on his head, and marches me along this very dark path, and I took my shoes and socks off because I didn't want to ruin them, and now I'm thinking, what am I walking on, you know? So I get to the room, and I turn the TV on, and there's nothing. So I said to him, I said, no, TV's broke. He said, oh. So he said, we'll go the other side, so, because there's two units, this thing. So I went the other side, and the TV worked, although it was one channel. It was in Sri Lankan. But the phone didn't work. And I got a picture of the biggest cockroach you've ever seen in your life running across the floor, and geckos everywhere, and ants, too, a lot of ants. So it wasn't a great night. So I want some food now. It's like supper time, and I'm hungry. So I look out the door, and it's pitch black, and I see this little light in the distance. So I kind of walk towards the light, as they say, and that was the dining room. And I'm sitting there by myself, you know, just sort of wondering if anybody's going to show up. And sure enough, the porter shows up again. And I said, oh, what's good to eat? He said, macaroni and cheese. I said, okay. I said, I'm so sick of Sri Lankan food. So I said, what about macaroni and cheese? So it turns out that that's all they had. So I had the mac and cheese, which was ice cold, and that was it. So it was a really lovely time. This is the swimming pool here. I didn't have time to go for a dip, needless to say. If you're buying something overseas, always use local currency. Don't get them to put it in American dollars. You do not want them to do the exchange rate. Okay? It's very important. So if you're in Turkey and you're buying a carpet, when you go back, you're going to buy the carpet, get it in Turkish lira. Do not convert to U.S. dollars. Let the credit card company do the conversion. Otherwise, they're going to charge you whatever they charge you, and then they're going to charge you a conversion rate, and I can guarantee you it's going to be much higher. And the last stop is Namibia. We good for another 4 minutes? Because it's still 11:45, right? So that's 4 minutes from now. So Namibia is right down here in Africa. It's known as, it used to be known as German West Africa. It's called something else before that. I can't remember offhand. It has the highest sand dunes in the world. This one is actually the highest, but this is the one you walk. And you have to do this early in the morning because it gets really, really hot. It's about mid-40s, and the sun is beating down on you, so it's really hot. It's about a 30-minute walk to this dune. These are all footprints, and it's really, really not easy to walk in sand. And it's even worse to walk down. So a lot of people, they slide down the side here. I wasn't about to do that. So I finally made it back, but just spectacular. And this orange, the projector doesn't really do it justice. It's because the sun is shining from this side, right? So it's very orange on the other side. When you get to like noon, then it all bleaches out. But it's just spectacular. There's a place called Lüderitz, and it's an old ghost town. It's an old diamond mine that's now a ghost town. So my guide said, you know, would you like to go there? And I said, sure. Where is it? He said, it's just 3 hours that way. I said, okay. It's right on the water. So I said, okay, this is cool. And of course, 3 hours back, there's only one road in. So I get there, and I'm looking for mining shafts because, you know, what do I know about diamond mining? So I saw these buildings, and there's a ton of them. So apparently about 1,500 people lived there at the turn of the century, from 1890 to 1910, something like that. They had a hospital. They had schools. But the mining was interesting because the Orange River, which separated South Africa from Namibia, the diamonds washed down the river, and then the current takes them up the coast, and they're on the beach. So diamond mining was people on their hands and knees picking diamonds out of the sand. So I thought, ooh, I can get rich here. I don't know why they abandoned it. So anyways, I didn't see any diamonds, but I did see a fence. It had a big sign that said De Beers on it. So I thought, oh, they must know where the diamonds are. So I'm jumping over the fence to take a picture, only to find out that I'm actually now in Angola. And there's kids there with these great big machine guns, and they're saying, go back. And I said, I just want a photo. Go back. I said, what are you going to do, shoot me? Yes. Okay. I could take the hint. I went back. So I never did find any diamonds. But these buildings are spectacular. Unfortunately, they're filling up with sand because it's so windy there. And you can see the sand coming in. And they figure in about 30 years from now, they'll be totally covered in sand. The whole thing will be gone. There's not enough money, tourist money, to clean them out. But it's really just an amazing place to visit. So I also saw a bunch of wild horses of Namibia that were released there in World War I and in the Boer War. And they've just sort of become wild, and they're running all over the place as well. So I stayed in a hotel there. I didn't go back that same day. Went back the next day. So these are zebras. They're different for two reasons than the rest of Africa, because they're white at the bottom, whereas the others have striped ones, and they're very, very fat. I thought they were all pregnant, but they're not. It's what they eat. They're very bloated. So you just roll down your window and you get a whiff of that immediately. No hiding that. This was a leopard. They're everywhere. They almost ran over this thing. He jumped out in front of the car. And we had like a Toyota Land Rover or something. So I'm sitting in the back seat so I can shoot out both windows. And Aldo's, the driver guy, is doing the front. And I got the windows open. And I'm shooting this leopard because he's walking around the car for about 20 minutes. And Aldo's is going, close the window, because he's afraid this thing's going to jump in. But it's a little pussycat. So it was great to see. Really great to see. Then we got between a giraffe and its mother. That's not a good thing to do. This is the baby giraffe. I didn't know the mother was on the other side. So giraffes apparently have a real habit of kicking whatever is in their way. They just turn around and kick like crazy. So we managed to miss it. But I was between an elephant and its mother once in Tanzania. And the driver, Ravi was his name, and he's a great big 300-pound guy, black as black with very white teeth. And he's telling me if we run into trouble with the elephants, they do three things. One is they stomp their feet. Then they flap their ears, then they trumpet, and then they charge. I said, okay. So he said, so we'll leave as soon as they stomp or flap their ears. But if we miss it, then we'll just turn the car off, and we will not breathe. We'll just sit there, and they'll charge, but they'll stop. And I'm thinking, sure. So we get between this mother and baby elephant, and we didn't see the baby. We just saw the mother, and she starts pouncing her feet and then the ears, and there's no time limit in between. Like, this is instantaneous, and the thing is trumpeting, and all of a sudden it starts charging, and I'm just so I expect it to sit there and freeze. And what does he do? He throws the car in reverse and he bolts out of there like crazy, and then the elephant stopped once we were away. And I said to him, I thought you said we were going to turn the car off and just sit there and not breathe. He said, that's what they say, but you see how big it was. So there was my confidence. So I got to stay with the Himba people. There's about 50,000 or so Himba people in this whole area in Angola and Namibia. And they live in little huts, and they kind of, you know, stick to themselves. They're really, really nice people. Not a word of English. My Himbanese is nothing. I get there, and I'm the only person in the village who is not a Himba. And so I'm sort of, these people take me under their wing. And they went like, are you hungry kind of thing? I'm always hungry. So they brought me what looked like a chocolate milkshake. And there was no straw, but it was like a big cup. And it was delicious. I drank this thing like there's no tomorrow. It was great. And then I went out and I took pictures of them and, you know, tried to find out what I could. I brought a whole bunch of $1 U.S. bills because I like to give them to, in lieu of a picture. But they didn't want the money. All they wanted to do was look in the camera to see their picture. So it's supper time, and, you know, there's goats, and they're eating out of the same dishes that I just ate my lunch out of and so forth. So it's supper time, and they want to, I said, another milkshake. So I said, how do you make them? How, you know? So they took me, and they showed me. So what they do is they milk a goat into a cup, and then they cut the goat in the neck, and they bleed it into the cup, and then they mix it up, and that's what you drink. So the second one didn't go down very well at all. So these are three little kids who are on a mission. You can tell the boy from the girl because the boys don't have any coverings. The girls do. That's how you tell because the hair looks the same. When they're older, the girls braid their hairs and the boys don't. They're really, really cute. That's my hut back there, and there's a couple of little kids looking in my camera. So that's it. Thank you. We're done. That's my website, and I do a monthly newsletter, a travel newsletter, so if you want to subscribe, it's free, of course. So it's kind of fun. So photosandtravel.com. Anybody have any questions or anything? Yes, sir. Not an option. Not an option. No. No. It happened to me once in Alaska, going to Alaska, and I was over, and I paid like $150 for 10 pounds or something. Yeah, for Icelandic Air, no, the planes were small, and it's an airplane, right? So you go by their rules. And okay. Yes, sir.
What's next on your list?
Egypt and Jordan. I've never been. That's coming up in September. And Monaco. I've never been there either, so. Sorry, Israel. Israel and Jordan. Sorry. I always get that mixed up, but it's Israel and Jordan. Yeah. No, gosh, no. I work with a lady who works for a company called Liberty International, and they're out of Slovenia, and they tap into guides and drivers all over the world. So I plot out my route based on what I want to see, and then I send it to them, and they tell me if it's a good route or a bad route or whatever, And then they recommend hotels, and I go online, check those, do TripAdvisor, that sort of thing. Then they actually book them because they get a better rate than I do. But that way I can go where I want to, when I want to. And if I want to get up at 8 o'clock and go, or 10 o'clock and go, if I want to stay an hour later, I can do that. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, you can. Yeah. It's not fun, because most of them are about this high, so you're on your hands and knees. But it's fairly well lit. Have you ever been to Vietnam, done the Gucci tunnels? They're a nightmare compared to this, because they're, like, very dark and very small, and you're crawling through those. So this is, I mean, some of them you can walk right up, and then you get into these carved out, like, a church, for example, and it would be as high as this ceiling here. And you can walk around and stuff like that. That's in Turkey, and Cappadocia is the center. It's near a town called Konya, which is sort of the religious center for Turkey. And that's where you get to see the whirling dervishes, too. So if you're thinking of going, good opportunity. Yes? Probably not. I mean, obviously, from a safety perspective, I may not go to Syria in the next couple of weeks. But no, I mean, I'm always impressed. Some places impress me more than others, but every place is kind of unique, and it's different, and it has things to offer. So I try not to set the standards by here. You know, I don't want to sort of have a McDonald's in every corner and, you know, Coca-Cola at every restaurant sort of thing. You know, I don't want people, we're just talking about that, people speaking English, you know. It's sort of like becoming more and more the norm that everywhere you go, people speak English. So we're starting to lose the culture. Yeah, I know. Yeah, it doesn't work. Trust me. No, not for me anyways. Believe me. You know. Yeah, I'm pretty loaded with stuff and have been for a while. It's much easier now. Like Twin Ricks gets you, you know, 25 years. Twin Ricks? 25 years of Hep A, B, and C. I still have some gamma globulin in my system from way back when, yellow fever, whatever, I don't know what else there is. I use Matt Schurter up in Sunderland. He's a doc up there, and he's a good travel doctor, and he sort of, every time I go somewhere, I go to see him, and then he sticks things in me, and I come back, you know, simple. Malaria pills, I've had malaria, so of course, the type I had, unfortunately, there's different strains of malaria. So I thought, oh, I had malaria. It's cool. It comes back about every 4 or 5 years. But it doesn't keep you from getting it in other places. So I still have to do the quinine pills or whatever. So, yes? No. I'm very, very careful. As I said, I do not eat anything washed in water. I eat only in relatively decent restaurants, you know, depending on where you are, you know, it's sort of relative, I suppose. But I eat simple foods, too. Like, I'll do grilled cheese sandwiches. I taught most of Sri Lanka how to make grilled cheese sandwiches. Because you can't go wrong with that, right? I take Ritz bits with me. I take instant soup packages in case I'm in places where I can't. Because getting sick, it's a double-edged sword, right? You don't feel well. Plus, God forbid, where are they going to treat you and what are they going to do to you? So, yeah, I've been fortunate. Yeah. Bottled water everywhere, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I always make sure, too, that the driver guide always has a case in the car. So it may be warm, but it's better than, yeah. Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they have. I don't want to take a chance. I really don't. I did a photo shoot of a hospital in Beijing. It was not a pretty place to be. I did not want to be there for any reason. I'd rather operate it myself. So, you know, I'm serious. I'm taking pictures as they're cutting into a guy's leg. I'm taking pictures over the doctor's shoulder as they're doing this. So there's cleanliness for you. But, yep. What do you mean?
Italian, if they hit someone, we don't stop.
Yeah, I've never experienced that. It's, I don't know if that's more movies or if that actually happens. I've had a few instances, but nothing like that. Nothing at all like that. In India, I think it's the worst place. We hit two motorcycles and a car. We didn't stop because they took the mirrors off the cars and they're not insured anyways. But the motorcycle guys were fine. They rode away. Yeah. I'd look for a new driver. I said, I'd look for a new driver. But, he's obviously talking from experience. I mean, I guess it happens. I don't know. I know in India, cows are very sacred. If you hit a cow, you're done. They'll swarm your car. They won't kill you. They won't hurt you, but they will give you a hard time. And they're only sacred because they're the closest animal to a woman, which is the most sacred person on earth. And because they give milk to their young, so they consider them the hierarchy of the food of the animal chain. So you can't own cows in India. They roam everywhere, and everybody feeds them whenever they see them, sort of thing. But it's not a religious thing as such. They don't worship cows, but you don't want to kill one. Not at all. So but I guess it happens. I don't know. I've never experienced it. The worst I've ever had was saying we're in Albania, and a cop stopped us and wanted 10 euros for going down the road, and we said no. But the driver said no. I didn't say anything. And he insisted, and he goes, no. Blah, 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 they're talking. So the cop took his stick out and he smashed the headlight. He said, oh, 10 euros for a broken headlight. So we had to pay the 10 euros for that. So, you know, go with the flow kind of thing. So.
If you
were going to go back to the country, you know, you know, that's a tough one. I could probably, if I had places to live, I would live in Namibia first. Istanbul second, and Athens third. To go back, depending on what the reason is, you know, because like I'd like to think that I've seen and done what I want to do in a country. If I have a photo shoot there, I usually tack an extra week or so on and do the stuff I want to do. You know, I mean, it's so hard to say because they're all beautiful. Like Peru is fantastic. I did the Inca Trail when I was young, and then I've done Machu Picchu twice since. But I was just talking to a guy who did another site. That's a three-day hike in the opposite direction, which sounds really, really appealing. I don't think I could physically do it. But, you know, there's so many places. I mean, I love Istanbul as far as the city goes. Now, I'll let you know in a couple of months whether, you know, I'll get shot at or not because it's volatile. But in Athens, too, I just fell in love with it. So, I don't know. Not Hawaii. That I can guarantee you. I'd never go back to Hawaii. Just hated it. I've been four times now. Went there on my honeymoon, 76. And it was beautiful, spectacular. It was very Hawaiian. I've been three times in the last 10 years, and it was very American. Like, it just didn't do it for me. So, you know, a lot of times you go somewhere, and you have a really, really good impression and feeling about a place, and then you go back 20 years later, and it's never going to be that good. So, you know. Sir? Yep. That's a good question. Six. Now, I was just saying I have about 220,000 negatives from the pre-digital days, and I usually shoot about 2,000 to 2,300 pictures per week when I travel. So, and from that, I end up with about 30 good ones, depending on what I'm going for, right, what I'm shooting. No, I don't. I keep everything. I do. And it's surprising. The reason I keep it all is because filters keep coming out. New stuff keeps coming out. So I can actually go back to pictures that I took 10, 12 years ago, apply new filters to them, and they start to look fantastic. So I have kind of fun with that. But I'm way behind. Like when I do a shoot, I take the pictures for the shoot. I go through them usually on the plane on the way home, decide which ones have potential. I work on those, and the others I look at maybe 6 or 7 years later. So. I have six of them. They're 4 or 8 terabytes each. They mirror each other. So, yeah, I'm a big believer in backup and that. But, yeah. Yep. I went to school. I went to Ryerson when I was really young. Took photojournalism for your course. 2 years photography, 2 years journalism. And And I had a job at a radio station in Richmond Hill called CFGM. I don't know if you've ever heard of that station. It's an old country station. I did the morning show there for 2 years. And then I was at a cocktail party, and somebody asked me about doing a catalog or something that they wanted the radio station to be involved in. And I said, well, you know, I don't know anything about that. But I ended up doing the photography for the catalog for him. And then Gord Martin, who you may have heard from City TV, he was at a function because my station was owned by Chum. And he was at a function, and we were talking, and he said, I hear you're a photographer. And I said, I'm the best photographer you'll ever see. And he had to do a shoot in Vancouver, and the fellow who was supposed to photograph it, he had to do a thing in Vancouver, and the fellow who was supposed to photograph it was deathly ill and couldn't do it. So he asked me if I wanted to join him. Yeah, like 23 years old, man. Absolutely. Me and Gord Martin, we're buddies now. So we fly out there. It was for Canadian Pacific. And they liked the pictures, and then he had to do a shoot in Shanghai. So I got to go with him on that, and another one in Tokyo, because Canadian Pacific Airlines at that time were doing routes there. So he was doing a video for it, and I was doing stills. So that's how it started. So I got to shoot for Canadian, and, you know. So I hustle a lot when I shoot. What I do is I put the word out. Like the Taj Mahal is a great example. You know, it's a four-day shoot, and then I email or write everybody in the world and say, hey, I'm going to be in northern India. What do you need? So postcards, magazines, anybody who needs anything. So I get a list of all these different things that I'm supposed to shoot, and then I plan my trip around that. So I lowball to get the gig to begin with, just cover my airfare and hotel, and then my profit and income comes from the other stuff, the peripheral stuff. So I've always done that. So until I sort of retired 10 years ago. I cut back from 30 trips down to 7 or 8. Just in Bolivia, in La Paz, there were miners were being ripped off by the government or staging this big protest, and they're going into the city, maybe 500 of them. And I was there at the same time, and all the police with their riot gear and everything on, and they started throwing dynamite. So I'm Mr. CNN, because, I'm all over this, right? And you get caught up in the adrenaline, and it was only the guide who was, you know, screaming at me to get back to the car, until I saw this woman come running with her left arm in her right hand. And that's when maybe I should go. So that's the only, plus these little skirmishes that I mentioned, but nothing, no. No. The world's pretty safe. I always think, you know, 99.9% of the people are going to be fine. That small percentage that's not, you just stay away from it. So like we were saying, right? If you come to Toronto, you do not go to Jane and Finch at 2 in the morning and walk around. You just don't do that. So, good. Yes, sir. Sorry? Yeah, I've done Canada from inside out. Absolutely. I've been to Tuk-Yup-Tuk. I've been up to the Yukon, Northwest Territories, every province. I wouldn't miss it. You know, being Dutch, this has got to be the second greatest country in the world, next to the Netherlands, which... I've done a lot of it. It doesn't thrill me. I mean, there's some beautiful spots, like in Arizona, that sort of thing. I try and avoid Florida, other than, you know, grandchildren to Disney World sort of thing. It's just not my thing. But I'm not big on the American way of life in that, you know, it's sort of the center of their universe. And there's some beautiful spots in the U.S., but I've only gone to photograph. I've never really gone on vacation there. Is that right? Yeah. Well, it kills the country, right? It just kills it. Yeah. People are the same everywhere. They really are. Once you get to know them. You know, I was raised in a Dutch environment where you learn to hate Germans because it was a war. You know, my parents, best German was steal your horse. But then you actually meet somebody, oh, really? You didn't steal anything. He's not a bad guy, you know. So one-on-one individuals, I have no issue. But this whole political scene and that, the racism, it's just not my thing. I mean, there's beautiful parts. Like, I love Chicago, for example. I love New York City. I went to New York for every 3 weeks for 2 years to photograph in a hotel there. And I love New York City. but not because it's New York City, just because of, you know, the way it is, the restaurants, the places, and that sort of thing. But yeah, I've seen a fair bit of the U.S. You know, probably see more. Very safe. Very safe. It is now. I wouldn't want to be there in 82. No. Rudy did a good number on that. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very, very much.
Envelope. Stay here, yes. Okay, well, as well as introducing John, it's my pleasure also to have the opportunity to thank him for taking the time to come up to be with us today, to share his photography. I like to take pictures myself, so I find his pictures really interesting and really, really good, and a very interesting explanation of the different places you've gone to and some very interesting stories and great sense of humor. Lots of questions, so you can tell you really were well received. So thank you very much, and just a small token of our appreciation.
Thank you very much.
No, you can't go, Jonathan.
Sure, blame it on me.
Could you take the draw?
Sure, absolutely.
We need...
$95?
We need three separate tickets.
So the first one, is this for the money?
This is for the money.
Okay, this is for the money. 539, you have to split it with me. 172. 539, 172, right at the back.
Okay.
Congratulations.
And if you could collect your money from John at the back, thank you.
Yeah, the other John.
Yeah. If you could take a second one.
Yep. Is this for the book?
This is for the book.
Okay, this is for one of my books, okay? If you don't like it, don't let me know, okay? I'm not good with criticism, as I said before. 539-156. Last one is 539-152. Right?
152? 156.
Yeah. The other one was 172.
Wait,
did somebody get it?
Someone
must
have it.
Okay, so the third one is 539-114.
Right. One more thing, gentlemen. Just quickly before we break, this week's joke. An older lady was traveling on a bus. She goes back and forth to the same supermarket for years. And every week she bought the bus driver a bag of peanuts. The bus driver loved peanuts and loved to see the old lady each week. After some time, the driver decided to work up the courage to start a conversation with the woman. He learned she had four children. He learned she worked as a teacher for 50 years. He learned that one of her favorite things to do was to bring joy to other people. So he asked her, "Why do you bring me peanuts every week? Why not spend the money on yourself?" The woman looked at him and smiled and said, "You know, I don't have teeth anymore. I can't eat peanuts anymore. I just like to suck the chocolate off them and pop them back in the bag." Thank you, gentlemen.
stop that.
I'll post it when you send it to me.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we can't seem to find it on the website.
What's that?
We can't find the speeches on the website.